So one of the things that it's hard to get people to understand is that you're always in the proper stance. You know, you're never like, you don't step up and go like, okay, let me get into stance. It's like, this is proper stance, this is proper stance, this is proper stance. So right away, you're in the proper position. So.
It's your boy LB. You already know what it is. It's fight time.
That it most definitely is fight time, but this is the Fight Life podcast. I'm excited. This is Fight Life number 2. Looking forward to growing this show a lot further. But we take you inside the lives of people that live the fight life. Not necessarily just fighters, but coaches, trainers, people that are involved in all angles of the fight life. But what we're trying to do is uncover what the fight life is really like, what people really go through, what the daily routine is like, but more importantly, sharing what people are fighting for in their lives, what they believe in, and what keeps them fighting in their lives.
Your boy LB, you already know what it is. It's fight time.
Welcome to the show, Light Burley.
Salute.
How you doing, man? I appreciate you coming on.
Oh man, it's a blessing, man. Thank you for having me.
Well, my boy D-Mac, Danny, man, we go way back, and I love him to death, man. He knows anytime he calls and says, hey, you know, this person's got to be on the show, that's what's going to happen. And, you know, D reached out. What I thought, it was beautiful, man. And it's crazy. I was talking about it on Facebook, right? I have this, I got this thing with 52, and I signed 52 instead of my name many times. And that's just been in my life forever, et cetera, right? And it probably means I'm taking it way deeper, right? It may just mean something basic. But when he sent me the picture, but he knows this. So he's always like taking 52 pictures, right? It's shots of those things. And so he took a picture of your sticker on a New York light post. Looked like it had been there for a while, been through it, yeah. You know? And and I saw 52 blocks. I'm like, I'm hooked. tell me more. I'm in, man. So, you know, tell
it's
me
a sexy number. 52 is a very sexy number.
That's what I would say. It helped in high school for me. after that I got lucky enough to meet Patricia, but after that I was, but yeah, man, I don't know. So why 52 blocks, man? Why that name?
Well, I didn't get a chance to put that beautiful name to it. I wish I could claim creator of the name, but the name actually came, there was many names to it. It was known as Jailhouse Boxing, Jailhouse Rock, Dirty Boxing, and then there was the 5% Nation, who in the 80s and 70s, they were real big in the urban community, and they attached 52 blocks, and the name kind of fit their whole thing there, because they have a whole numerology thing going on. So, you know, 5 + 2 = 7, 7 is the God number, so they went off of that to kind of like promote what they were doing, attach their thing to something that was already growing, which was 52. And it worked. It was just like, you know, a lot of people always ask me that. And I always figure it was just the name that people stuck with, like Biggie Smalls. You know what I'm saying? Like, why Biggie Smalls? Like, the name, when you really think about it, makes no sense. But, you know, the people, they went with it. So 52 blocks is kind of the name that the people went with. It really has. It does describe basically in general what the art is about, but it didn't go all the way back. That name is really recent, like the 70s, early 70s, that name came about.
So just for people to trying to catch up too, is you're talking about a form of martial arts or basically a whole form of martial arts then?
Yes. It was basically created by boxers. boxers, urban boxers that were more defensive fighters, decided to work on real defensive skills as far as being sparring just on the defense, clever footwork, clever hand feints and blocks. And then from there, it kind of turned into its own thing, because you also at that time, you had hip hop that was in its early stages, still growing, and you had like up rocking. So it kind of it blended right in with the up rocking thing, because it's so rhythmic that it almost has that capoeira thing that in form itself, it looks like a pretty dance. You know, it looks like a real dance over an actual fighting system. You know, it kind of blossomed from there and turned into its own thing and kind of went into a unique style of boxing. You know, Zab Judah used it against Mayweather. I think it was like the fifth round, but he kind of busted out in desperation. So I never really counted. You know, I respect what he did for the 52 Nation by showing it on that level, but it was a desperation move and he went on to get beat up. So, you know, we still, you know, that was the elements of it. And I think he showed it in his form, which was clever hand feints. That's his real true fundamental, is the ability to feint another fighter.
Yeah, there's even links. Eddie Bravo, I think, is the first guy I heard talking about it, the founder of 10th Planet, where he had some breakdancers that have come in that have been like 10, 15-year breakdancers. I don't know. They were experts. And how they just kind of picked up on jiu-jitsu and were able to do things faster, quicker. And they were adding some of like these dance move rotations and spins to what jiu-jitsu was and what 10th Planet is is a mix anyway.
Yes. Well, you know, the correlation between fighting and dancing, I think, is, you know, it can't be overlooked anymore. Like, you know, you see some stuff like, oh, he's just a dancer. He couldn't really do nothing. But there's an element that links dancing and fighting. You know, you look at Lorachenko, by far one of my greatest boxers. Love Lorachenko. His father sent him to ballet 2 years out of training him. So, and look, you know, 465 fights, one loss, he makes people quit on their stool. So I think it can no longer be overlooked. Something that Bruce Lee had talked about, which was he added the cha-cha step, what he was doing. So the rhythmic part of dancing as a fighting, because as us as 52 block fighters, I always say 52 block fighters, every art form has a specific place that they're attacking. Boxers, they went to Muay Thai, men went legs, and, you know, the Pacific areas that they go after. 52 block men go after your eyes. They go after your perception, your depth perception, how to understand the range. And that makes them very tricky fighters to deal with when you're dealing with a highly skilled fighter.
Well, you gotta find a way to advance it. When people like Mayweather prove that not being hit is the longevity in the game of boxing. Yes. I think the same is to be said in MMA, right? It's the game. Because all it takes is one, right? That's I mean, 10 seconds and the one catch. Oh, we got him, right?
Oh, man. Much love to those MMA fighters. I had an MMA fighter, and the first night I coached him for his first fight and really seen what they have to deal with. Oh, Lord, you know, it's so much. Like you said, I backstage, I watched one guy getting ready for match, and he was hitting the pads, and I mean, he was beautiful, ping, 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 slip, dip, dive, and it was awesome. So I was like, I got to see this man fight. So I went to go see his fight, and he was fighting another guy that came out with a scully cap on, and his whole style was to pick you up and throw you down. He picked you up, and he put you down on the ground hard, and I watched this beautiful boxer just taken apart by a simple technique. So those MMA guys, man, that's a tough thing there. But once again, I believe the thing that they're missing more is defense, heavy defense. Because when you have to worry about so much of kicks, chokes, and punches, your defensive ability needs to be strong. And it's not that's not just about blocking. That's blocking, feinting, clever footwork, you know, how to pull yourself out of traps and stuff like that. So I believe 52 blocks is the only art that exclusively looks at that. Like, I've been to a lot of gyms. Everybody's punching, kicking, and choking. Everybody's doing that. Very few know how not to be punched, kicked, or choked. And that's the problem.
Yeah, well, that's a You see, a lot of martial art forms have kind of had their time and day through MMA. You know, where you know Hoist and Gracie family and jiu-jitsu goes, oh my god, what is this? You know, and jiu-jitsu becomes the master, which still kind of, if you ask me, is still kind of the you need to have that. And then the karate thing showed back up. It had the Machida era, right, as Joe referred to it. And then the Wonder Boy guy kind of brings the karate back. But then you got this Nurmagomedov wrestler, pull him down, hold you down, Daniel Cormier, pound you to death. And this kind seems to be what's winning. That's DC's approach. And John could, Jones could, but you know, that's DC's approach as this Nurmagomedov guys, Khabib's, or it's his approach is this drag him down, pull him apart, you know, just hold him down and beat him up. And it's amazing to watch the phases of what wins and what doesn't.
Hello.
Yep. I got you. Yeah. I think, we should still be live. I can double check it.
Okay, I'm good. I'm back.
All right. Go ahead. Beautiful. I think I was. It's what you're seeing is all this emergence of small little things that are hard to avoid, like the front leg kick, etc. I was walking through the transition and trying to find ways to defend, you know, this kick, or because in later rounds it starts to tear guys apart. You know, a lot of guys that don't set up for it, round twos, round threes, that front leg's killing them. And like you said, a need for defense. I love that beautiful approach because, I mean, frankly, if you're fighting in the street, there are no padded gloves. There is no referee, and it may just take that one knife or that one shot to the jaw. You know, and I don't know. That seems a little bit better route. You know.
No, it's you know, as a fighter and as using fighting as your way to make money, you want to think about it. You know, everybody else that goes to their job, they see themselves, you know, working there for a while. Like, you know, you don't see yourself getting a job and then 2 days later you don't have the job. You see, you picture yourself going to be there for a while. Fighters should do the same thing. And if offense is your only means, you will not make it. I've seen it. You will not make it. Because there's always a bigger monster. And, you know, and because with MMA, it's like three card Monty. You're a good boxer, but your wrestling sucks. Someone chokes you out. You're a good kicker, but your boxing sucks. Someone hits you with a left hook and knocks you out. You know what I'm saying? It's the reason why they find it very hard to have a reigning champion. And if they do, you know, there's always something going on with it because it's so big that the only thing that could cover that is more attention to defense. And they just haven't got there yet. You know, just like boxing in its earlier stages, it was almost outlawed because it was like two men stood in front of each other and kicked each other's ass. The last man standing won. And then boxing became the sweet science when fighters introduced defense. And that was the emergence of Jack Johnson, you know, Joe Gans and all of these other black fighters who had, you know, Gans, he couldn't fight on the ropes because they would beat his shins with billy clubs. So he was forced to learn to fight in small circles so he wouldn't be cheated out the fight. And this type of defense is what MMA is missing. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, you see it in boxing because boxing has had so many years of growth and, you know, so far to understand this lesson that this is, and Mayweather just showed it, is that longevity is through defense, you know. So, we love the Gotti type of fighters, the Lamada type of fighters, but those offensive type of fighters rarely have long careers unless they're very special. So defense to me, like I said, I go into a lot of gyms, it's the elephant in the room. Everybody wants to kick ass, but nobody wants their ass kicked. And that's what, I think that's where a lot of fighters forget that when you sign the contract, the universal contract, to face off with another man, your ass is on the line too. You know what I'm saying? And everybody wants to believe they have this killer art that, no, I'm just going to walk in and just destroy him. Like, no, he wants to go home too. He probably has kids that want to see him come home. So, you know, even the bad guy or the good guy is going to fight for their life. And you must be prepared for this, that he's going to try to hit you back. And if your defensive level is strong, your offensive level goes to new heights. And I say this without any type of ego, but when I spar, because of my defensive ability, I can, once I pinpoint where you're at, I'll start hitting you at will. And it's not because I'm an offensive monster. It's because my defensive eye has allowed me to see where you're lacking at. That when you throw the jab, you pull it back and it's at your waist level. So that means the right hand is on its way. And, you know, so, but if you don't have that defensive eye, it's like being in traffic. You miss those moments. You don't even see them.
To find a defensive specialist, right, I think is something, is a niche everyone should be looking for on this level. I mean, yes, whether it's MMA, boxing, or any other level. I mean, the idea, yes, of not being hit, like I said, Mayweather, and you've said, is the example for longevity. And, you know, I write about, I if you will, founded the diagnosis athlete's depression. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, head trauma. And yes, boxers are receiving head trauma, I think, more, yes, than MMA. I mean, you're getting hit more, yes, times in the head. Yes. And so the idea is not to be hit, and longevity. Yes. And like you said, I've also talked where, actually the first Fight Life, podcast we did, this will end up, by the way, being a cross post podcast. This Fight Life podcast number two. So I appreciate you doing that too. But I talked about, you know, everyone believes, right? And so everyone envisions. And so what happens when you have the two titans trained at that moment, and they both have the utter belief that their skill will, like you said, crush them, and it's over. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the separation, actually, now that you're talking about it, I wasn't thinking about it. I was saying, well, it's got to be a little bit of luck, some timing, you know. It becomes fine tuning, and I think it would be the damn defense. Who gets, yes, hit less?
Yes, yes. And any level, when you get to the highest level, we've seen the Cavaliers versus Stephen. At that level, it comes down who can block a shot, because everybody's scoring. Everybody can shoot your eyes out. Everybody's shooting your eyes out, ping, ping, ping. Now it's going to come down to a turnover, who can stop a shot. You know, it comes down to those little moments that decide between two titans who's going to win. And that's why the sayings always came, offense wins fights, defense wins championships. No,
yeah, you, yeah, get, I'm a football based guy. So and I played linebackers. I'm biased way back then. And so it plays forward as it's appearing to boxer. I mean, you're the expert boxer guy here. So you're calling it there. I mean, I know a lot of jiu-jitsu guys too, that really push on the defense rather more, yes, than the offense.
Yes. Yes. That's why they win. Like, nobody really seen what the Gracies was doing to get to where they were doing. When the Gracie started, when he started really taking on matches, and you see these matches, he was using defense. He kind of came in, buried his head into you, because he knew one thing about striking. See, the thing about striking is it's really a tricky art, especially when you're dealing with somebody driving in at you. It's hard to find a knockout punch in that millisecond. You know, that's why boxers have 12 rounds to figure that shit out. You know, but when it's happening on time, striking is really a tricky art, you know, because anybody can just bury their head in, drive, take two of your best shots, catch him on the wrong place. Now he got his hands on you. And when they go to the ground, it's about them feeling what you're going to do that allows them to do what they want to do. They don't force arm bars down there. I've been with some guys, man, the guy hit the ground, he became an anaconda. When we were standing up, he was stiff as a board. But as soon as we hit that ground, his leg was curling around my neck to choke me out. So their highest level is defense. That's why they're so good. That's why a 12-year-old girl doing jiu-jitsu can handle a 250-pound man, tie him up like a package on the ground. How is that possible with all of this strength? It's because they are using body sensitivity. That's like a body defense, where they feel what you're trying to do, beat you to it, and close you out. That's the sensitivity of defense. That's like a Tai Chi type of thing. But that once again goes into, they don't hit the ground just trying to do whatever they want to do. You open up and give them something. They put a little pressure, you expose the arms, bam, and arm bar slapped on you. They give you a little pressure, you expose your neck, they seal the breath, choke you out. So their whole fighting system, the reason why it's so good, is because they're working off of what you do. And that's the defensive mind. The defensive mind has to be brave, because you have to let him initiate so you can work. A lot of people get in the moment of the time, they panic and they just go and punch it. You know, the defensive mind allows you to, you know, take off some shots, throw some shots, so we can figure out who you are. And then, you know, then we get you out of there. And that is the smartest way to fight. And like I've always said, that goes to, you know, fighting is not a sport like a football, but still every sport need, every sport has it. And I always use football as my as an example, because they have a whole team dedicated to the defense, to the defense. It's not just one. They have the whole team. The offensive team comes off. The defensive team steps on. If that doesn't tell you it, you know, you know, I don't know what else does.
Yeah, I like that, man. As a full coordinator for the whole whole issue of defense. I mean, I could philosophically stretch it also into life. Is, you know, we can go into our lives or our daily lives or a fight with a plan and a scheme, if you will, and a setup, and we can be trained and ready to go. But sometimes life throws something at us we don't see, right? It rushes at us, and our defense in life, how we respond to life, how we respond to the attacks of our own thoughts. Of things that happen to us, you know, a correlation of being sharp on that, same defensive approach.
Yes, no, definitely. That's one thing I tell my students is the good thing about martial arts and the physical is by way of practice, it seeps into every part of your body. That means mentally and spiritually. So this defensive practice seeps past the physical, hits the mental and the spiritual, and you become this defensive being, which is humbleness. Like, you know, all through this 52 block thing, because it's an urban system, and, you know, I've always had this thing where, you know, I train kung fu arts too, but, you know, because it's not, I will always say, because the, you know, the Chinese have really a chokehold on martial arts. You know what I'm saying? There are other, you know, cultures, but the Chinese really have a chokehold on it. So if your thing doesn't come through them, it doesn't exist or it won't work. So I've always had those guys come challenge me. In one of my best fights, the guy came and challenged me, and I was defensive through the whole, even up to the draw up to the build up of the fight. I was telling him he shouldn't come, we shouldn't fight. This is not going to look right on camera. You know, this is the first time I ever went this route. Usually it was like, you want to fight, let's fight, let's go, you know, let's do this. But this right, I chose to do something different. And I tried to stop this fight all the way up to the fight, and even after the fight, when I seen he had enough, I just stopped. And that's what defense gives you, mercy. Defense gives you mercy, the ability to see that the opponent has had enough. Now, if all I had was killer techniques, I would have just broke his neck and looked at the aftermath. And that's the problem with all of these offensive systems that tell you to kill, kill, kill. You know, you learn this system, you get into a street fight, break his neck. That's not true. The best thing you need in the street fight is defense. Because if I can make you miss a couple of times while talking to you, guaranteed I can talk you out the fight. Because 95% of people don't really want to fight. There's only like a 5% of crazies that really actually enjoy fighting. So if because of my defensive ability, I can show you why this fight doesn't make sense, most people won't fight. But if my only response to you getting upset is to hit you with this Muay Thai kick I just learned, the fight is now on, and we fighting. And maybe I Muay Thai kick you, break your leg, you trip off the curb, somehow roll in traffic, a Mack tongue truck hits you. Because we know how life is. Life is funny this way. Yeah. Now, your whole life is thrown away.
Hey, so, man, what you're saying is real. It was back in high school, man. It was an all-star game locally, and we all were practicing at University High School. It's on the news. It's all internet still. But anyway, we pull up for the first day of practice, man. And a young guy had been killed by an older brother of an ex-girlfriend or something. The older brother showed up, punched the kid in the head, and the kid fell, and the curb killed him. And look, there people may be responding and saying, no way, that is the response. Somebody messes with me. You know, people, the joke, you know, wish somebody would, right? Well, this is what we think about. And honestly, man, I know people or friends, they treat that strike when you hit somebody and you hospitalize them. You could do 5-10. You kill somebody, your life is over.
Over.
You know,
over.
And so, you don't need it, man. And hey, look, and I'm dead ass guilty. Sometimes you catch me in high tense traffic situations and I forget I'm a human being. I do. And I'm like, oh my God. You know,
that's what I mean by it starts to seep into all parts of you where you start to even control those, because offense is not just a punch in your face. We have verbal offense, spiritual offense, and you start to control those things because of your defensive nature. And it makes you humble where you lower yourself, but it allows you reasoning and mercy. So that way, what I believe, whatever happens, the universe now gifts you with the power to handle that situation, because you did show mercy. And I do believe in there are spiritual elements that go into fighting. And when you tap into them, it's almost like you go undefeated. I know for sure that I will never lose another fight now that I understand the formula of fighting, which is first, always show mercy. Always have the strength to say, no, we don't need to do this. This is stupid. This is crazy. This fight is not needed. And it's hard to say that. And the reason why it's hard to say that is because people are not trained in fighting. It's like you can't have professor confidence for something you don't do. And fighting is the only place really where that happens big. Nobody's trained to fight, but if you stop somebody, you say, oh, I'll beat the shit out of you. But when's the last time you trained? But nobody says, you know, if you ask them like, yo, can you play football? They're like, oh, no, I don't know how to play football. They're very honest about that. No, most people are very honest about those things. No, you don't want to play a game of ball? No, I don't know how to play basketball. You know, but when it comes to fighting, everybody lies.
Oh, and that's true. You can talk to a 14-year-old kid, man, and just be like, you know how to fight? He's like, yeah. No, you don't, man. You know, it's no, honestly, you man. That's a lot no, you of ego.
Yes, and the reason why, and this to me has been my mission with 52, is to train and get this art out and teach people this art, because it gives you the confidence to turn down fights. Because my teacher will always ask me, do you know who fights? People who don't know how to. And it's true. It's us in the know that really know how to fight. We rarely are doing any of this world star hip hop. Like, you can turn on world star hip hop and we have yet to see Mayweather on there fighting on the corner. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? We have yet to see the real high tech fighters doing that. And if they are doing that, we know one thing about them. They're not right in their mind. The Adrian Broners, the Mike Tysons, anybody that's went that route, their career has shown that was the correct route. You know,
Well, even recently, I got a question, Connor, man, throwing the chair, you know,
there you go. And he's heading down that path. And it's easy. And this is why defense is necessary, because defense is what counteracts that offensive monster that's growing in Connor. Because a defensive mind would have told him, I'm not going to be out here throwing no dollies at a bus. I'm saying I'm worth $100 million. I'm that dude. Like, they could take my whole life away. See, that's what your defensive mind will be telling you. But your offensive mind is telling you, no, fuck that. They're dropping me. Throw this wagon at this truck. And now look at his face in court. See, everybody talks that tough talk. But wait till they get in court. Look at their faces. You never see with the disdain and the malice when you're in front of the judge. See, I would respect you if you throw the dolly and then you get in front of the judge and tell the judge to suck your dick. I respect you, because I say you're going all the way. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But look at Connor's face. Look at the reflection. And now the defensive mind, the defensive reflection is kicking in. Like, why the hell did I do that? So,
man,
you know.
It's sad, man. I hate watching something like that. And when a guy like that, or even what John, you know, being fairly or unfairly accused this last one, what he's gone through. But just it shouldn't even really be a question. You know, all of that, you know, if anything, it would be the first offense. It's sad to watch, you know, people experience that, especially when I got to watch them achieve their dream. You know, I love watching people achieve what they set out to do. And, you know, make it to higher levels where you're like, wow, man, there's some leadership there, you know, and move beyond it. But honestly, like you said, a defense somehow mentally from the money, the fame that comes with that, man, there needs to be a defense mechanism in place. But, you know, I add this to it is, let's say you're a starting out fighter and we got to work on your mental game. First, I'm going to work on what you believe, what you can envision, what you truly believe about yourself, the other fighter.
Yes.
And by the time you build the Connor, right, or pick a guy or a John Jones, by the time you build this, the belief they've had to concrete so rough into their head that they are the best, they are unstoppable, they are a superhuman, period. Then once they reach that, it's kind of like how Jim Carrey kind of flipped it a little bit after acting so well, you know, they get so deep and then to this champion belief that then it goes beyond it. I'm writing kind of currently in the book about how, what does the champion then have now? Once they have got to what the dream was, check. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, nothing's changed about my life. They still go, I'm still kind of depressed. I still kind of feel this from time to time. And then there's this explosion that happens from it, man. And it's tragic.
No, it's like the mantle of the champion it's hard to hold. And I think when you watch somebody achieve it, you're like, there goes the champion. He did all the right things to get the belt. And he did the right things within the fight to get the belt. But to maintain that mantle of championship, only few men do it to a high level. And this is one of the reasons why I also...
Who do you think of right now? Best champion of all time in your mind right now? Emotional question.
Right now, I would have to say on totality. All time. I'm looking at the total package. I have to say Floyd Mayweather. Wow. I have to say Floyd Mayweather. And I say Floyd Mayweather because, you know, like I said, the mantle of the champion is hard to carry. So you look at Floyd Mayweather's career. He was in the strip clubs drinking cups of water. We never seen a blunt hanging off of his lip. We never seen five people carrying him out the strip club because he's so drunk. You know, he did the things that looked like that other fighters were doing, but he didn't do them in the way that hurts your body. Because to be the champion, you live a boring life, really. You live a boring life. You can't really be doing the drinking, the smoking, the hanging out. You got to always stay training. And the holding that is hard by itself. Forget, you know, you can throw a good left hook. You've mastered that. But the mastery of temptation, because I always use Zab Judah and Mayweather. They both had the same talent when they started. Both. Very good. Why isn't Zab Judah on Mayweather's level? Well, Zab Judah has 13 baby mamas. He smoked weed. He got drunk. He was in and out of jail. He did everything wrong that you can do with holding the mantle of the championship. And that's why it passed him by. So I give Floyd Mayweather the greatest ever because of my teacher. My teacher once told me that I couldn't have a boxing conversation with him until I watched 4,000 hours of old boxing footage and do this research. Yeah, he said, don't even talk to me until you do it. So it's doing that. Shout out to Wilson Pitts, greatest teacher ever. Roberto Shaw, Wilson Pitts changed my life. I wouldn't be right here if it wasn't for those men. But because he told me that, I researched all these fighters, and I found out that most boxers couldn't hold the mantle of the championship. Even Sugar Ray Robinson, by numbers, he's a better fighter than Floyd Mayweather. But he beat up his wife. You know, he had, you know, he pimped out women. He partied too hard. Mayweather did not. I mean, all black. I'm gonna leave it on just black champions. Most all black champions were felled by drugs, partying, and women. Took out most of them. And I mean, as far as their career, yeah, their career, having money, having to come back and get knocked out because they didn't have no money, messing up their careers, the whole thing. Now, let's look at Mayweather. He's almost worth $1 billion. He's came back, beat everybody up. You know, he had that little scuffle with his baby mama. That's probably like his only blemish. You know, a little, and we're not even really too sure what happened with that. You know what I'm saying? It could have been mainly her bigging up. We don't know. But when you look at his totality, we know Mayweather is not coming back to boxing because drugs made him use all his money. We know he's not going broke no time soon. We know he started 24/7 that, you know, the famous boxing thing. He's done things for boxing that just can't be done ever again. So when you look at the totality, nobody's done that. Ali, Sugar Ray Robinson. You know, Ali lost $40 million to the Fruits of Islam. They robbed him. He, you know, he went through his whole thing. So nobody's been able to do what Mayweather did, is to retire on top, still pretty, all of your teeth, not talking funny, and a bank full of money. So yeah, I give him the best ever.
I think you make a hell of an argument, sir.
Yeah,
I think
you give him the best ever. And that's before that, I gave it to Rocky Marciano, another fighter who who carried the mantle of championship the way when he trained for a fight, he would only let his wife touch him through a chain link fence because he said in his book, he wanted to envision the opponent was the reason why he couldn't touch his wife. So he mentally mind fucked himself to kill you. So, and this is the mind of a champion. This is the mind of a champion. Marciano didn't do no drugs. He never had problems. His work ethic, he changed the work ethic of boxing. There's two people that had a crazy work ethic in boxing. Rocky Marciano and Floyd Mayweather. And is it any coincidence that they both hold the highest record of no losses? Is it a coincidence that they both had the strongest work ethic ever seen in boxing, and it's 49-0 and 50-0? No, there's no coincidences in life. There's no coinky things. That's and,
but for me, I would, I don't know, if I compared the two, to stay okay in today's social media world, where every whisper you do is judged and filtered through God knows how many offended filters. Back then, it was like a newspaper or two.
Yes.
You know?
Definitely.
And
definitely.
So trying to stay fully exposed as if, you know, we all live our lives, you know, perfectly. And the fact that, and I know, you're right. He puts on the image that sells, that makes the money.
Yes.
Honestly, I don't even think he talks shit that good.
No, he doesn't. Like Rude Jude ate him up in the interview one time. It was, and I give it to Rude Jude. Rude Jude is the best. Like, I don't know why Mayweather even tried to get into a word semantics with a disc jockey who's very good at his job, because Rude Jude ate him alive, because he's not good at that. Like, Mayweather sold no drugs. He puts out that life. See, that's the one thing I disagree with Mayweather, because what happens is the younger black man under you is thinking that maybe some of those things, you have to do some of those things to get to where you at. And by promoting that life and never living it, you're kind of putting out, you know, you're putting out a false narrative, because Mayweather sold no drugs. He slid from his mother's vagina into a boxing gym. And you know what I'm saying? He never seen the streets. Mayweather, like Adrian Broner, is a street boxer. He is a street guy that was in the streets that made it in boxing. And we can see how that's affecting them, because he can't get his shit straight, because he's a street guy, and they don't, and you know, street guys can take it how they want to take it. They're not too smart. They're not too bright. I'm sorry. You know what I'm saying? It's one of the things of being in the streets is that you wasn't hard on your academics. And every now and then you catch a street guy who can catch on fast, and he may be smarter than the others, but this is a rare person. You know, most street thugs, if you look up the definition, they're not the most sharpest knives in the drawer. So they'll make those mistakes. Where you look at Mayweather, why didn't he make those mistakes? Because his father and uncle already made those mistakes. So he had people that carried them. They kid gloved them. They made sure certain people couldn't talk to him. He couldn't stand on the corner with the drug dealers, because they would lure him in. He was protected. And that's why part of his thing is, so he carries the mantle of being the champion so well, is because he doesn't have those real hangups like most urban black guys have to kind of like make money and show it. You have to let the world know you got $1 million. You know, Mayweather does it, but he's doing it with very good accountants, a whole team of people making sure he doesn't go past the numbers that mess him up. Where, you know, someone like Adrian Broner, you know, he's burning through millions. And when he gets to like Mayweather's age, he'd be lucky if he has any millions left.
Yeah, man. And to not let that life eat you alive, much less just be undefeated, but let that type of lifestyle not suck you into where it's just this weekend, I ain't got to fight for 2 years. You know, not to let that come out, especially under the watchful eye. I guess, yeah, man, from an approach to live it that way and not get sucked into it. Yeah, you know, I have to lean that way. I want to know more. Kind of if I was opening up the book, if you will, the 52 blocks, right? I kind of want to know the genesis. If I'm reading, you know, opening up the book about the roots of it, deeper into it, right? The founders of the feast, right? Its influence. Can you walk me through some of that history, man?
From the history, and one of the things that my teacher Wilson Pitts, he was very hard on a lot of kung fu systems and these certain fight systems. You know, these cultural fight systems that, you know, that we, you know, all cultures kind of have, you know, oh, that shit wouldn't work in the fight. Or, you know, he's very hard.
Yeah.
So I never really told him about the 52 blocks, because I thought he kind of would wash it away. But when I told him, his eyes got wide, and he said, you know, 52 blocks. And I was like, yeah. And I was kind of expecting him to come out and say, this is bullshit. The whole system is full of shit. But he was like, no. In the Philadelphia gyms with Joe Frazier, they called it wall boxing. And he said, you should really learn your history about it. And because of the 4,000 hours that he made me watch, I did get a chance to learn the more credible history of how. Because like, there's a lot of people, even when I came up, there was guys that said people started in jail and it came through playing cards, and they would throw the cards on the ground. And all of that stuff seemed kind of mythical to me, because I'm very pragmatic.
What's that? What was, I love myths, man. Walk me through the myth.
One of the myths was it was created in jail. And now the problem with that is that they won't let you train fighting in jail, because because that would be like riot form. They would never let you do it. So they said, but in jail, that the one way that they would hide it was they would play cards, and then the guy would throw cards on the ground, and as you picked up the cards, he threw punches at you, and you had to use certain blocks attributed to the cards. Now, to me, that's too much information. You got to remember which block goes with the queen of diamonds, and then he's throwing punches at you. You're under pressure. I couldn't believe it. It sounded real fantastical. But anyway, so there's a couple of those. But what it was through boxing. 52 came about through black boxers. Now, black boxers brought something to boxing that boxing hadn't had at that time, which was defense. Now, it was because of a cultural thing. Now, in one of the reasons why 52 blocks wins in the urban settings, because where I came up at, if you get into a fight, now I'm fighting this guy, I'm winning the fight. Somehow I throw one, I miss, he punches me in the eye. You know, I hit him with a shot, knock his ass right on out. But before he knocked me out, I got a black eye. Now, I go back to my hood, and they say, well, he kicked your ass. And I was like, well, I won the fight. He said, well, he gave you a black eye. So it's because of that crazy thought in black fighting that you have to win a fight without being touched, created 52 blocks. This was the soil that was laid for 52 blocks, because in our way of fighting, we believe in putting out the most maximum damage with taking no damage. And you can only do this through high defense. So there was one reporter that seen young Jack Johnson, and he was quoted as saying, look at young Jack Johnson catching all of the punches on his forearms and elbows, using blocks to set up alternate strikes. They had never seen nothing like that at this time. Pretty much boxing was stand and deliver. You punch me in the face, I punch you in the face. You hit me in the face, I hit you three times, you hit me six times, and so on and so on and so on.
They had rounds that would go like 50, 60, 70 rounds sometimes, man.
Yes, yes, yes. And these are the fights that John L. Sullivan, he was the last bare knuckle fighter. So he's seen the days of where they pointed people out the crowd, like, who the hell wants to take on Big John L? And a man stood up, came out the crowd, and they got it on. So there was no science to this. It was pretty much machismo. Stronger man, putting his will on the weaker man. And that's when boxing was on its way of being outlawed. It was not, they had him in the back of speakeasies. It couldn't be done because it was too brutal. Now they let black fighters enter. And with black fighters comes this style of defensive fighting. And now you merge it with this other offense that's already there, like Bobby Fitzmons, who's credited with creating the left hook, which he calls the solar plex punch. He's credited for making that weapon. Now you bring these two things together, offense and defense, and you have what? The sweet science. Now boxing goes on and becomes boxing. So the side effects was that being overly defensive fighters already, Jack Johnson fought on the Chitlin circuit, 10 black men in the ring blindfolded. And he was a continuous winner blindfolded.
Don't get hit.
How do you fight 10 other black men blindfolded and win? You have to be heavily defense. You have to have something going on where you're not eating shots because you can't even see the other fighter. You have to kind of feel your way around. So this thing itself took a life of its own. And right around the time of hip hop growing came this unique style of fighting, which was black boxers coming back to the hood with this defensive style. And it took on a life of its own. And before you knew it, it wasn't even called boxing no more. It was called 52 blocks, jailhouse boxing, dirty boxing. It became this unique style of boxing. And by the 70s, when I was coming up, everybody fought like this. Like every back then, you manned up by fist fighting. You didn't go get a stick, knife, or gun. You fought with your hands. So every level of skill could be seen in the 70s in street fighting because that was your only method. So people were in the house making up stuff, getting ready for their next fight. So street fights were very good then compared to this stuff that you see on World Star Hip Hop now. That's terrible. You can actually enjoy a street fight in the 70s because there was some actual science involved. So that's how 52 kind of came about and took a life of his own where it just became its own thing and kind of branched off from his mother art, which was boxing, and became his own beast by itself.
Well, in the same sense, though, I want to walk from the other side, if you will, and your life as you came up, as it merged with 52 Blocks, or how this really entered your life. But well, walk me through early influence, man. Walk me through your early days, et cetera, and then now.
My early influence was a guy named True Guard. He was part of the 5% Nation. And
where were you?
My first visual.
Give me the setting, bro. Where are we at, man? Where are we at?
No, this is Far Rockaway, Queens, in the projects, Far Rockaway, Queens. And back then, the older brothers had a hand in, you know, really, if you knew how to fight and trying to show you how to fight. So they were always beating on us, trying to show us new techniques. And we seen them fighting. So I'm coming out the building, and there's this guy I look up to named True Guard. And he's arguing with a guy. And he has his two friends on the side of him. And they're looking at him, and he's looking at the guy while the guy is doing a whole lot of beefing. And he suddenly does what now I know to be called the triangle trade. And he tapped his shoulder. He had his hat, and he moved his hat to the side and then tapped his other shoulder. And the guy that he was arguing with followed his hand to the other shoulder, and True Guard knocked him out. And that was it. No, it wasn't like a big fight. But what I seen, what caught me, was how he set up the punch. And maybe because I was always into feints and that style of fighting, it really struck me. And it, from that moment on, It was stuck in my head. And I had one move that I knew from 52. It was this move right here. This is all I knew. And I took it with me in every fight. I had one move. And I didn't know why I was doing it. I just seen other brothers doing it, and I kind of imitated it. So this is Queens, New York, where, you know, a lot of the brothers out there, they're fighting this way. So then I moved to Manhattan. And I tried to further my knowledge in 52. But the brothers in Manhattan really didn't know too much about it. Like I spoke about it, and they kind of looked at me confused, like, no, we never heard of 52 Blocks. So that's when I kind of figured out it was mainly a Brooklyn and Queens thing. Heavy in Brooklyn, real heavy in Brooklyn. But so I'm asking people, nobody knew what I was talking about. So this one guy I met, he introduced me to a guy named Rob Mel, who was very good at it. And he would come down and he started training with me. And it was like at this time 52 Blocks were trained through slap boxing. Like a brother, you know, they slap box with you, they slapped you in your face, and you kind of had to like catch on to what they were doing. Nobody really gave you instruction. Like it was kind of like imitate what they're doing or keep getting slapped in your face or keep getting slapped in your face until you learned how to block that part of your face. So that was the way they kind of taught you. So it was hours and hours of slap boxing. Me and this brother Rommel did. Then I met another guy by the name of Mr. G, and he had more of a systematic way of was like you kind of had to train the moves that you were good at. Like you had like a group of moves and you trained them. And by this time, for me being in Queens and now Manhattan, I had a whole lot of, you know, I had seen a whole lot of moves. I had remembered that later on in life, you know, Wilson Pitts, you know, not blowing my own horn, told me I had a photographic memory when it came to fighting shapes. Because I remembered a lot of the shapes that the brothers that I had seen from other brothers, and Mr. G gave me some shapes, and I remembered a lot of the shapes from Rommel. And I ended up getting into a fight, my first chance to use the 52 blocks, and you know, it was with a bigger guy, and he had like an 18 inch knife. I had a little razor blade, and they was like, well, drop the razor blade. And I was like, well, you know, he has a knife. Tell him to drop the knife. So he dropped the knife. I threw away the razor blade, and we square off. And I'm thinking in my mind, this is a good time to see if this 52 blocks thing works. So he came at me with these, like, hammer-like punches, and I threw up a block called the Crown, and I blocked four of his shots. And I'm thinking in my head, like, oh, shit, this shit works. Now, all around, everybody's laughing at me because what I'm doing looks kind of chicken wingish. You know, it doesn't look like the normal way of fighting. So they're laughing. But I'm thinking in my head, like, this is working. And I seen in his eye his ability not to get in, maybe because he probably won a lot of fights with that punch, that he couldn't get it off. I can see him dejected in his eyes. And that's when I seen the first power of defense. You can take a man straight out of the fight if your defense is strong enough. I mean, like, his brain, because you can't fight against the brain. When the brain figures out, oh, shit, we can't do nothing, it starts to recoil and raffle.
There's something you said to that, man. My boy Julian, man, he just fought at Combat Night a little bit ago, and he's but 9-1, 9-fight win streak, all first round submissions for the most part. Not on Jiu-Jitsu Master. He has his own little version called Smooth Jitsu. Anyway, he's fighting a killer, a guy who basically just pulls people down, holds them down, and beats the shit out of them. And they're the main event. They're the main bout. I mean, it's a sold out place. It's good, man. And it goes 53 seconds. And you could watch the other guy kind of quit because he pulled Julian down and he tackled him like normal, pulls him down, and Julian just kind of stood back up. But you watched his opponent give up, I guess. Maybe not give up, but he definitely didn't give up. It was more or less like, holy shit, kind of a look like I tackled the guy like I did everybody, and he stood right back up. And you feel this sense of defeated, I think. And when you watch some of Mayweather fights, too, you see fighters kind of give up, where they swing back and forth. Wrapping up, was talking with Julian. I got my boy who was fighting that night, and he was fighting a killer, man, who just drags people down, you know, and just beat them up. And well, Julian's in there, like I said, 53 seconds. Guy did. He tackled Julian, got him down, and then Julian just kind of popped up like nothing was on him. And you could see the guy's face just go, "Oh no!" Like kind of like I pulled him down with everything I got, and he stood right back up.
Yes.
And he beat him 53 seconds standing guillotine.
Wow.
He's a beast. And that guy wouldn't just be like, you can't just beat that guy like that. You know, Julian's a monster. You could see where the guy just was like, I can't do this all night.
Yes. Yes. And if you look at one thing I would say about Floyd Mayweather fights, like what I love about him is everybody comes in ready to kick his ass. But if you look at their face in the seventh round, I've put it down to a science. It's usually the seventh or eighth round. Look how dejected they look. When you look in their corner, look at their eyes. Like, they have the look of, like, I've tried everything. Like, I don't know what to do anymore. Even down to Pacquiao, who I thought it wouldn't happen against. I figured Pacquiao was going to fight to the end. But by the seventh round, he had the look of every other fighter before him that fought Mayweather trying to solve the puzzle is, I don't know. I've tried everything. I did my tricky left hook. I did my fake stutter step. None of this shit works. And then that's when the unraveling starts to happen. Because in a fight, the fight is really energy. So when you touch a person, you know, you hitting them, you touch them one time in the beginning of the fight, both fighters are kind of leery. But then one fighter starts seeing that he can touch the other fighter more, and you can watch the confidence in him grow. With each shot he lands, he's like, by the 12th shot, he done dropped his hands, and now he hot dogging in front of you. Because that is the confidence stream that's in fighting. Because fighting is a constant ebb and flow of confidence to giving up, you know. And it's back. And some people, fighters can hold it, but sometimes it shoots back and forth. But that flow alone can dictate the fight over the skill of the other fighter. Knowing this fighter is a monster, but he just tried his best move, and now he's looking around like, what do I do? So to me, that's the gaps that defense can create. When using defense, you can create those type of gaps in another fighter to get him to start believing against himself. And that's what happened with Pacquiao Mayweather, was that Pacquiao seen, just like everybody else, I can't land a fucking punch on this guy. You know what I'm saying? Because he figured, I'm fast. Like those other guys, they couldn't touch him, but I'm Pacquiao. I'm Pac-Man. My hands are fast. But when he got out there and seen, like, I'm hitting nothing but air too, look at his face in the seventh round. He's totally out of the fight, you know? And it's the same thing with Lorachenko. Lorachenko is a very offensive fighter, but he's highly defensive. You don't hit him as much as he hits you, and that's what makes people quit. That's what makes you quit. Now, if you punch me in the face and I punch you in the face, and then I punch you in the face and you punch me in the face twice, even though you hit me twice, I'm still thinking, shit, I touched them once, though. Now, if you punch me in the face twice and I go to punch you in the face and I miss, and then you punch me in the face three times and I go to punch and then I miss, and then you punch me in the face four times and then I go to punch and I miss, by that third time, I'm like, fuck this. I'm saying, I can't hit him. I can't find him. I'm saying, he's kicking my ass and I can't touch him. That's what makes a fighter give up. Not offense. No, offense can knock a fighter out. Like, you can totally get rid of him. I can knock you out, you know, and now you ain't in the fight. But if you stay in the fight and you can't get rid of him, offense starts to turn against you. Because if I'm hitting you with my best shots and all of a sudden the other fighter realizes, like, oh, shit, he hit me with his best shots and I'm still here, his confidence starts to grow. And that you can look at that in Canelo and Triple G. Canelo went into that first fight thinking, oh, my God, this is Triple G. Now, look, he was talking much shit by the second fight because he's already figured, I've took his pitch punch. It's not really that scary. Like, you know, y'all made it to be bigger than what it really is. It didn't really affect me that much. I think I can kick his ass. And that's where the neutralization of all invincible fighters start to fall off. You know, once you, like, even with Mike Tyson, once he's like, oh, shit, I got Mike wobbling. I can take him.
Yep.
You know, so that's where that thing comes in. So being a defensive fighter helps you to not go through those moments, even when it looks like you're taking shit, like even when you're under attack. You know, you put up this, you know, you're able to put up this this front. You know, even being able to feint something is a defensive fight. Like in when Ali was fighting Joe Frazier in the long walk, he was hurt, but he had started doing this thing where he was kind of like faking Joe Frazier out. Instead of Joe rushing him, Joe was like, hold on, it's a trap. I'm not. And because of that, he allowed Ali to get back in the fight. So being smart enough to do those type of tricks is a defensive move to set up, I'm really not hurt when I really am really hurt. That's a defensive mind state. So that right there is a defensive quality that can help you and help your offense to grow. But like I said, because most fighters train on that offensive fight, they never get to see it. But anyway, going back to my story, after training with Mr. G and them, I eventually met Wilson Pitts, and he showed me the weakness in my 52 and all of the learning, the training I had learned, which was, you know, this fainting, is that I didn't know how to throw a punch. He said, his words clearly was, you punch like a girl. No offense to all of that haymaker stat. Huh?
I know, I was covering our disclaimer. No offense to any girl fighters or female MMA fighters.
No offense, but that was his thing. And what he was trying to say was, through all of that defensive ability, I had never trained how to throw a correct punch. So they go together. You know, and that was the weakness to most 52 men at that time, was that they were throwing haymakers and, you know, they didn't really know how to throw balanced punches, and except for the boxers. When it left that boxing thing and it kind of got into its own world, a lot of other fighters picked it up without knowing how to actually throw a punch. So part of my defensive training was that I had to learn how to punch and also learn range, because once you learn how to punch, you learn a better range. So it was Wilson Pitts that kind of corrected my 52 and gave me a better offense to go along with this strong defense. And you can see that in some defensive fighters like Emmanuel Augustus, who is like, when he's being defensive, you can't land a punch on him. But then when he's being offensive, he sucks. So, you know, if you look at Mayweather, what makes Mayweather good is that he has a blend of both. He is very defensive, but when he gets to punching, he kicks ass, period. Like, there's not, like, he has the best, punch landed record in boxing. I think out of 10 punches, he can land 6 on you, which is insane. That's insane.
Well, especially if you're not getting countered with 5, trying to land those 10. That's a big difference. The stamina that makes it, man. Basically, you've just been fighting your whole life, man, and coaching and training your whole life.
Pretty much. I went to a half-ass military school in Philadelphia called Girard College. And, you know, I took up Taekwondo in there. Since I was the only kid from New York, I kind of had to represent New York, so I spent a lot of time fighting. Scrapping. I call this scrapping. Now I call myself a fighter now. The years before I learned how to fight, I call it scrapping. That's why I call the guys in the street, they're scrappers. They're not fighters. You know, fighting means that you're mentally engaged. You know, scrapping is kind of like a reaction. So I did a lot of years of scrapping, and I think my biggest fortune was meeting great fighters like Wilson Pitts and Mr. G and Ramel Scott, who we had a falling out, you know, because once 52 started taking off, a lot of people got upset because, you know, some of the other 52 guys wanted to kind of play up the criminal aspect. And I never really did. I never really seen the need to play in, like, I was a gangster or a thug. I'm just a fighter. And I don't believe even being a thug can help you. I beat up thugs all the time. Like, you know, I still have no problem beating a thug under the car. You know, it's like, so I don't believe that really qualifies you to be a good fighter. I think what qualifies you is hard work, dedication, focus, good teachers, and the willingness to be a student is what qualifies you to be a good fighter. And so since I didn't want to take that path, they attacked me. You know, if you look at my earlier stages and bringing 52 to the internet, my skin is rhinoceros thick because of the YouTube attacks. Because of YouTube, I've learned how to be very, I've gained very thick skin. I've already had thick skin, but it's even tougher because, you know, I mean, I had so many darts. I had people going to sleep and waking up sending me comments. Like, you can see they were dreaming about things they wanted to say to me, like, you suck and I can't wait till you die, like Burley, die. And I had other
don't read the comments, man. Don't read the comments, man.
No, the comments are killers. Like, I'm telling you, if you want to engage in any type of social media career,
diarrhea,
where your life is in front of this camera, get tough skin or you will not survive out here. Because comments, you know, I see today, you know, without the strength, comments have drove people to commit suicide. And I'm always amazed how that happens, but it's happening. So, you know, get thick skin if you want to be in this line of fire, because they're coming. So I spent the first early 5 years of 52 just under attack.
Hey, man, nowadays you watch some of the best fighters in the ring lose it on social media and fuck up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They can't take it because they you know, they spent so much time only working on the physical aspect of it. They didn't do the other aspect. And this is what Wilson Pitts was good at, that you had to learn. You couldn't learn Tai Chi unless you learned how to box. And he used Kung Fu as a way of calming what he called fire arts, like boxing. Like, you learn boxing enough, you walk outside, you want to kick somebody's ass. Like, they step on your shoe and you're like, no, you're ready to hit them with the left foot combination. So, you know, he always talked about, you know, fighters have that thing. And it's true. Like, being a coach, and, you know, I had a Golden Glove fighter and I had an MMA fighter that did well. Watching those worlds, it is true. Because of the Kung Fu influence on the mixed martial art brothers, they have more love. Like, I would take my fighter into a boxing tournament, and the young boxers, because I look young, would walk up eyeing me like, yeah, so what's your weight? How much you weigh? And I'm like, listen here, young man, I am the coach. Get away from me. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're real dicks. Like, you know what I'm saying? I hate to put it, but boxers can be dicks. Like, they're real aggressive. Now, when I went to this martial art, when I did my first MMA tournament, I'm backstage working with my fighter. One of these guys said, oh, shit, who got Light Burley here? Who brought Light Burley here? And it was this big guy. I mean, he was big. He picked me up like I was a girl. Like, he, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I had to fight him, he could have just broke me in half like a Chico stick. It wasn't even a fight. And he gave me this bear hug of love, like of respect of everything I had did. You know, it was, and at that moment, it was like two different worlds. Like, and it's still the same. I go to MMA tournaments and they love me. Like, they high five me and slap me on my back. And I go to the boxing thing. And, like, you know, when I was going for my boxing license, the guy that was giving it, he asked everybody what they did. And I said, I teach 52 blocks. And he said, oh, 52 bullshit. And I was like, no, I do 52 blocks. I don't know what art you're talking about. And he said, well, if you bring your fighters in here, they're going to get their ass kicked. So because of him, it was the mission I set out was on the mission to give me a boxer and to take it in there. And I did. We, you know, we were Golden Glove champions and we kicked everybody's ass. And if that coach is watching, egg on your face, because I'm here. So, It's like I said, boxing can be real fiery, and Wilson used Kung Fu as a way to kind of tune down that fire, and I'm glad he did.
Which is good to do. It's a hyper-vigilant situation, because if you're a trainer, let's say you fight four times a year, You know, you're training in hypertensive situations, so the body acclimates to needing to spike to these places, these portions.
Yes.
You take a week off from training, you may be divorced that week. You know what I mean? You may be in jail that week.
If you don't find
something, you got to purge that, that even the silent rage that gets built up, you know, and it's, I definitely see where Kung Fu, not necessarily as the art form of attack or killing somebody in the ring, but the decompression of the killer.
Yes. And that's why Wilson Pitts, greatest trainer I've ever met, to put it in that aspect. Like, you know, he taught us Kung Fu and Kung Fu techniques, but the Kung Fu really was the depression of the, of the fire arts, and that's how he seen it. He said, you know, you have two sides of your brain. You have rational, you have intuitive. He said, you have two sides of fighting, the East and the West. You know, in the East, you have the intuitive, in the West, you have the rational. You have boxing. You punch me in the face, I punch you in the face. And the Eastern, you have, we fight like cranes and monkeys and animals. So if you put those two together, you're actually forming how the brain is made up. And he wrote a book on this. You know, and it was one of the best explanations I ever heard of why Kung Fu and boxing belong together. And that's the way he taught it. And, you know, I'm a product of, you know, one room school, Wilson Pitts. You can find him on YouTube and Facebook. Give him a plug there. One room school. But I'm a student of one room school. And that was his teachings that, you know, the two helped each other. And you need both of them. Like, you couldn't just be a good boxer without Kung Fu, because it gives you a different look on it. And you couldn't just have Kung Fu because, as we can see with a lot of the Kung Fu men, they don't have the dog. They don't have the dog in them, you know? And, like, you know, we just seen, like, there's an MMA guy going out on the YouTube kicking the shit out of, you know, Kung Fu guys. And I just seen, he just beat up a Wing Chun guy. He beat up the Tai Chi guy. And what he's exposing was what Wilson was talking about. These Kung Fu men have no dog. You need dog, you know what I'm saying? Like, before you become a wolf, you need the dog. You know what I'm saying? You got to have that dog in you. You got to have that, I bite down and I'm not letting go. We about to fight. And then we can take this dog and make him a high-level predator, an apex predator. But without the dog, you have no apex predator. And that's the reason with these Wing Chun guys, these Tai Chi guys, and that's why they will always get their ass kicked by this MMA guy who's just coming with dog. He, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. He just ragged the Wing Chun guy. He threw him into, like, the wall or something. Like, it was ridiculous. But, like I said, he's exposing what my teacher, Wilson Pitts, talked about. And that's why we box. Because boxing, you get that dog. You know, wrestling, you get that dog. You know, Muay Thai, you get that dog. These are arts that are, like, you know, to get good, you got to be in there fighting them. Like, you can't become no good wrestler, you know, in the abstract thought of what wrestling is. No, you got to get down on that ground, be choked, you know, be pulled on, be leaned on. Like, I had one dude just, like, drop his weight on me. He obliterated me. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to learn these things. So
nowadays, with Nurmagomedov, you got to be wrestling fucking grizzly bears at 8 years old and 10. Yes. So unless you're doing it, you know, it's quite the evolution, man.
Yes. No, but that's the point, that you got to wrestle the bears to understand what it is to wrestle yourself when you start getting abstract. And that's why, you know, hard systems are usually, if he's a hard fighter and he lives long enough, he gets spiritual. Like, if you look at the Book of Five Rings, Musashi, he killed so many men, he started using a wooden sword. You know, like, he had chopped so many in the beginning, all he wanted to do was lob heads. Like, if you step to me, your head is going to fly. But after, like, the 56th head, he started getting all spiritual. You know what I'm saying? He started hitting people with wooden sticks. And that is the progression of all real fighters. All real fighters go through that level of, I want to kill, to, like, you know what? I don't want to kill you, because in killing you, I lose a piece of myself. With every person you kill, you lose a piece of yourself. And if you kill enough people, you'll have nothing left. So, you know, the killing, us in the know of real fighters, we know, is not really about the killing. Like, I remember a long time ago when I was trying to fight and I met a doctor and I was in for a physical and I was telling him about how I was learning this art, Denmark poison hand. And I was asking him if it worked, like, could I turn a man off by hitting his pressure points? And, like, I wanted to kill stuff. And the doctor looked at me. He said, you know what? You do better if you learn how to heal a person first. Mm. And those words mean sense now. It's true. You know, you do better learning the healing aspects of what you do. And as because of that, the byproduct of that is you learn the killing techniques. You know what I'm saying? Because I learned the left hook in myself. I learned what a left hook means to my own anatomy and how it makes me stronger. Now I know how to kill with it. But I learned it through myself. I didn't learn the power of left hooking by left hooking people. I learned what it felt good how it feels good to my anatomy. And now it feels so good to my anatomy, I can do it in the blink of an eye and catch a man with a left hook before you can think about it. So that's the inward journey is what really makes you jump levels in the fight game. And defensively, becoming a defensive fighter, you naturally have to go inward. See, when you're fighting offensively, you can close your eyes and throw punches. You ain't got to think about the punch. You know, people fight and they don't have no thoughts in their head. But see, now to duck a punch, you have to be thinking. So becoming a defensive fighter, you bring something online that most people don't bring into the fights, and that is their brain. And Wilson used to always tell me, Jamar, your head is more than just a hat rack. You have a brain. Use it. So most people can't bring their brain into a fight because they fight on what we call autopilot. It's a reaction. They're so scared, they react. And in the reaction, you don't do smart stuff. You just follow what's going on. But when you become a good fighter, you become a responder. You don't react no more. You respond. And that's why in the world today, we don't have the first reactors. We have the first responders. You know, when somebody comes to save you, they're the first responders. They're not the first reactors, because if they were, they probably wouldn't save nobody. You know, like the house is burning and they run the wrong direction.
I'll be on fucking World Star.
The
first reactor is the motherfucker filming my shit burn, man.
Exactly. So with defense, you become a responder. And to become a responder means you have to actually bring your brain into the fight with you. And when you do that, the byproduct of that is you become a better puncher, striker, choker, kicker, because now you're thinking about ways to punch, kick, and choke your opponent and set him up. So he does that. You know, my teacher, Wilson, would say that half the fight is getting the man to participate in his own ass whipping. He said, when you get real good at fighting, you'll make him participate in his own ass whipping. And now I understand what he means by that. You know, people fall on my fist. I don't actually punch you. You just fall.
Hey, well, regardless, look, people don't like new things that challenges the status quo that they've learned. So if one, don't read the comments, but if anybody is attacking anything, man, it's generally because it challenges what they believe to be true or could change that. And so if I urge anybody, if your first greeting with anything is fuck that, start there, because that's a concrete belief worth challenging, because you can learn other things beyond that. And if you're responding that way, there's probably a good chance you're defensively responding mentally. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And then in the fight game, you know, all things are almost equal, if you will, at the top level when you look at things.
Yes.
So whenever anyone's look, I mean, look, Connor brought in the EO poor tall dude, for the butt touching guy. You know, that it's ridiculous. You know, now Jeremy Stevens, you know, he works with functional patterns guy. This has been beneficial. It's worked out, you know, but everyone's got these little cool edges, and we don't find anything until creators, innovators, or people like you that are re-innovators that take something that's been around, dusts it off, you know, spins it and puts it to modern day application, man. That's fuck the haters, man. If they're hating you, welcome. You know what I mean?
I wish you. Fuck the haters.
Yeah.
Salute. Thank you for that, man. I appreciate that. Like, that is exactly what I try to do. Like, I tell the new people that come in all the time, I tell them I did not create this. I just, you know, like you said, blew the dust off of it and repackaged it, you know, in the light that it doesn't have to be gangsterism. Like, I tell people all the time, every art form has gangsterisms in it.
Every art form can kill someone. I mean, you know what I mean? The martial art is designed to hurt or defend yourself, but either way, you're hurting someone.
Yeah. And when you think about it, these art forms that really hurt and they do all of this damage, who really needs it? Who really needs these art forms? The military and criminals. And this is the reason why criminals have always been associated with martial arts. They're doing crime. Of course they need to know some Wing Chun or how to left hook. They look at their life.
Hey, look, I know it ain't real, but I watched Demolition Man last night. You know what I mean? I watched Wesley Snipes kicking the shit out of everybody.
That's right. I'm saying, like, you look at the Yakuza. What is that? Like the Japanese mafia? They use the Shogun beliefs. You look in China, the Chinese mafia, they will use Wing Chun on you. They will beat you up with Wing Chun, the Chinese mafia. You know what I'm saying? So these, you know, the fact that how they try to point out the gangsterism in 52 over other arts is just them trying to find another reason to sink the boat of 52 that I won't allow. And like I said, I challenged them all to show me any art form that hasn't been criminalized in some way. Show me the art form with the halo over it that's kicking ass.
Hey, I can probably show you somebody doing prison time for using each one of those art forms.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
Ex-military, ex-cops.
Ex-military.
Cops that should be, guy defending girlfriend at the bar. You know what I mean? You've seen it. And you even get charged more. If you're a trained killer like that, you're a deadly weapon.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, when I was bringing it out, my whole thing was bringing out the science, the use, the health benefits you get from becoming the defensive fighter, not the fact that a couple of the 52 block men were known to go to jail, to spend some time in jail, you know. So since I didn't big up that part, you know, like I said, I had a lot of the 52 block men attack me. And this is for all fighters, that one thing that beats everything is consistency. Bad luck, good luck, no luck, half luck, people hating on you, people disliking you. Consistency destroys all of that. And I buried my head and consistently put out videos on the information about 52. And those same guys that spent all of their energy attacking me and not building their fortress. See, when you attack another man, you forget about your home. Your home goes to shit. So while they were attacking me and I was building my empire, when they look back, they ain't have nothing. And now to this day, I've become the leading expert in 52, not by my goal. I didn't set out to become the 52 block king or any of those things. I put up a video saying that I'm no king. I'm no special man. I put my pants on just like every other man. No, so I won't take those titles, because those titles are the titles that lead to what we were talking about before, is that champions have to believe they kick everybody's ass, but absolute power corrupts absolutely. So that belief starts to go against them, like Roy Jones. You know, so you have to temper that thought of you can kick everybody's ass. And
yeah,
I stay grounded with it.
I'd be more worried if the 52 block guys were more staying close to your friends, because if you follow the art of war, then right, it's know thy enemy. And
that's right.
And if it's a chance to where I could have teamed up with you, if I was a 52 block guy and another guy, we could either learn, grew together, join forces that way. But if I'm coming across as not even wanting to get to know you, or see what you add to what we're doing, or whoever, for title or for recognition, then well, that's missing, I think, the point of maybe why the whole martial art is there.
Yes, yes, and because of that, they've thrown themselves into oblivion by chasing titles and so-called street creds that.
Yeah, it's hard though, right? Because that's the money these days, right? That's the brand. Yes, social media. Yes. It's my brand. Yes. I'm this brand. And so it's this race. So everybody's claiming I invented this. I said this. I built this. And I'm like, motherfucker, we've been around a long time. Ain't no original idea. All right. Yeah, Somebody thought it didn't do it. So we can. Right. But I also believe that we build on the shoulder of giants that way.
New
things come out that are mushed together. When we take this, we take this, and we mold, and that's what we do.
Yes, it's a game of perceptions. Because like my teacher used to say, two arms, two legs, nothing new under the sun. There are no new styles. There's only but so many different shapes we can do as humans with two arms. So everybody's system is going to look alike at some point. But the perception of how we perceive things is what really gives us the innovation of change. And you perceive it to be one way. I perceive it to be another way. And now we have a new innovation. We have another way of looking at the same different thing. And that's the greatest thing about all martial arts, is that it's free expression. You know, this, you know, Bruce Lee talked about it. There should be no cults. Like, I owe no allegiance to 52. Like, you know, I'm not giving them, I'm not drinking no 52 chicken blood at night. I'm not signing no, with up no cults. I'm not getting down with no special programs. I owe no allegiance to it. Matter of fact, these systems owe allegiance to the man. You know, like, no, man doesn't bow to the system. System bows to man. We are the hierarchy here. The systems came from us. Like, I tell people, like, these systems didn't fall out the universe. A man made them. So they're all faulty at some point, because a man creatively thought about Wing Chun. He thought about boxing. He thought about wrestling. All of these things came about through us. They didn't fall out of the trees. We didn't see letters written under bushes that taught us these things. Like, the tiger doesn't have to go to tiger school to learn tiger style. It's a fucking tiger. You know what I'm saying? We're humans, and these are the things that came from us. So all of this bowing down to these style, where we owe them these allegiances, that, you know, we have to do it this way, is what really kills the art. You know, free expression allows the art to grow. And that's what I've shown the 52. And if you want street creds, build them up. Like I've always said, like, there's nothing wrong with building a buzz. I did it. And how I did it is I went to everybody's gym with my 52 and said, I'm here. You can... I'll give you 3 minutes to try to punch me in the face, and I won't do nothing. I'll let you to show my art. I'll let you be the offensive monster. And, you know, I've done it. Different states, different schools, whoever's your fighter. I've worked with Mayweather's new knockout artist, Rolando Romeo. I did the same thing with him. And what I've shown is that street cred. That's how you build street cred.
That's YouTube viral. That's YouTube viral shit is what that is, man. You need to be posting that shit.
No, yeah, that's up. That's, but see, that's what I'm saying. It's like, that's how I build my street cred. A lot of guys want the street cred, but they don't want to put in the work to do it. You know, everybody want to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. You want that street cred? Go after it. Go to the streets and build up your credibility. I took my fighter to Venice Beach and challenged anybody to knock him out. I went to the SA Locos. It's on YouTube. You can look it up. Young Burley goes to California. And I told the SAs, knock his ass into the bushes. Anybody that can do it, I'll give you $50 if you can punch him in the face and knock him out. And what happened is nobody could do it. We ended up getting a great video. And that's street cred.
Hey, that's live and in person, man. And to wrap it up, man, where can everybody find you, the gym, the, you know, to reach out if they're interested in getting involved with this? What's put it all out there, man.
All right, well, we got the school thanks to Sensei Mo. I'm training at 233rd West 135th Street, new breed fighting. You can check me or email me at lightburley52blocks@hotmail, lightburley52@yahoo. The YouTube channel is 52 Blocks Info. I got over 2,000 videos up. You can go see my fights, my street fights. You know, the whole history is there, when they hated me to all the way up to where they loved me. You got LightBurley52@Yahoo, LightBurley52Blocks@Hotmail, LightBurley_52. I just started training actor, entrepreneur Snoop. And by way of Snoop, I just got Peter Guns. I'll be training him this Friday. I met with Ludacris. Shout outs to Ludacris. Shout outs to Frazier Diallo. And stay tuned. We got more store. You know, we got movies, a podcast. It's Frazier Diallo and Maurice Crump, the guy that helped Chad Boswick with Black Panther, is working on a web series called Cash that will be displaying 52 Blocks. I'm working on a boxing web series that will be displaying 52 Blocks. I have a fighting league coming up, the first slap boxing league. So if you like to slap faces, come join my league. I'm bringing slap boxing back. That's right. For all you young guys that need a way to channel some of that world star energy, bring it to Light Burley. The first slap boxing league, Slap One, will be starting up this summer. I'm kind of waiting for the young kids to get out of school so they can be a part of it. So Slap One will be starting this summer. Stay tuned. More is coming.
Oh, man, I appreciate you coming on, man. And the mic's open to you anytime, man.
Thank you, man. I loved it, man. Awesome show you got here, man. If you're not watching this show right here, you're not watching the right thing. Get down. I'll be plugging you everywhere I go now, man. The setup, the questioning, everything was beautiful here, man. You're good at what you do. I felt so comfortable. I could have did this for 4 more hours and not even paid attention to it. So salute to what you do. And hopefully soon again, when I've taken this a little further, we can come back and reinvestigate this this one that we did here, and we'll be able to build off of that one.
Oh, that's the fun part, man. We've been going 3, 4, almost 5 years now, man. And I'm going to cross-post this one. So this will actually be episode 2 of the Fight Life podcast, but I'm also going to post it on TCR. We had MMA guy Eddie Truck Gordon was our first episode on that. And he's up your way too. And so you'll be episode 2 on that as we build on and add on to that, man. But again, bro, anytime. Awesome. Thanks again, man.
Thanks for having me. Salute to y'all. See you on the next one.